45 for them.
Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari Jaya Radha Kunjubhi Janma Vanava Giribhara Dhari Jaya Gopi Janma Vanava Giribhara Dhari Shuddhanandana Braja Janma Ranjana Jashodanandana Braja Janma Ranjana Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jamuna Tira Vanachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Vihari
Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Gacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimat His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jaya Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Gacharya Ashtotara Shatashishimat His Divine Grace Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj Srila Prabhupada Ki Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrinda Ki ISKCON Founder Acharya Srila Prabhupada Ki Garantarashimam Bhagavatam Ki Itai Gaura Premanandi All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to the assembled devotees All glories to Shishiguru and Shigoranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, the Summon Bonod, Chapter 13, Stealing of the Boys and Calf by Brahma, Text Number 45. Amyam tamo vannaiharam. Kadyotar chir ibahami. Mahati tarama jaisyam. Nihantyatma nijunjataha. Tamyam tamo vannaiharam. Kadyotar chir ibahani. Mahati tarama jaisyam. Nihantyatma nijunjataha. Tamyam tamo vannaiharam. Kadyotar chir ibahani. Mahati tarama jaisyam. Nihantyatma nijunjataha. Christian. Tamyam tamo vannaiharam. Kadyotar chir ibahani. Mahati tarama jaisyam. Nihantyatma nijunyataha. Tamyam tamo vannaiharam. Kadyotar chir ibahani. Mahati tarama jaisyam. Nihantyatma nijunjataha. Tamyam.
On a dark night, tamabat, just as darkness, naiharam, produced by a snow, kadyota archihi, the light of a glowworm, Eva, just as Ahani, in the daytime, in the sunlight, Mahati, in a great personality, Itaramaya, inferior mystic potency, Aisham, the ability, Nihanti, destroys, Atmani, in his own self, Junjataha, of the person who attempts to use. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. As the darkness of snow on a dark night, and the light of a glowworm in the light of a day have no value, the mystic powers of an inferior person who tries to use it against a person of great power is unable to accomplish anything. Instead, the power of that inferior person is diminished. Purport. One who wants to supersede a superior power, one's own inferior power becomes ludicrous, just as a glowworm in the daytime and a snow at night have no value. Brahma's mystic powers become worthless in the presence of Krishna. The greater mystic power condemns inferior mystic power. On a dark night, the darkness produced by snow has no meaning. The glowworm appears very important at night, but in the daytime its glow has no value. Whatever little value it has its loss. Sorry, whatever little value it has is lost. Similarly, Brahma became insignificant in the presence of Krishna's mystic power. Krishna's Maya was not diminished in value, but Brahma's Maya was condemned. Therefore, one should not try to exhibit one's insignificant opulence before a greater power.
Om jnana timirandasya jnanjana shalakaya chakshur ummilitam yena tasmai sri guruve namaha. Namo om vishnu padaya krishna prasthaya bhutale srimate prabhupada swami iti namo. Namo om vishnu padaya krishna prasthaya bhutale srimate bhaktivedanta swami iti namine. Namaste saraswate deve gauravani pracharine nirvishesha shunyavadi pashatyade shatarine. Vancha kalpa tarubhyasya kripa sindhubhya eva cha patitanam pavanevyo vaishnavevyo namo namaha.
So the description of Lord Brahma becoming completely bewildered and astonished by and humbled down by the display of opulence of Lord Krishna. Lord Brahma is considered the most intelligent and qualified personality in the universe. One can only understand the mystic powers, it will be impossible to understand the mystic powers of Lord Brahma. He is the first created being, he has no mother, or at least he came directly from the personality of Godhead, Lord Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. And he is a personality that creates this whole universe with all these planets and all this, its variegatedness. And Lord Brahma has perfect knowledge of all that. So to be able to understand this, the powers of Lord Brahma is impossible. He is also understood as a guna avatar. So he's so qualified that he's empowered by the personality of Godhead to fully perform this act of creation. He is the deity of the mortal passion. So in this situation, Lord Brahma displays his powerful mystic potencies to test Lord Krishna. Now, when we listen to the pastime, we have a sense that Lord Brahma he have an understanding that Krishna has appeared, and this boy, it was already known there, it was already announced. Garga Rishi announced it, he was able to see it. There was an understanding, there was an instruction that Krishna, Lord Vishnu, gave to Lord Brahma and all the demigods that he was going to descend. And he instructed them to appear in the family of the Yadus and, you know, in order to assist them. So there was, it's almost a news word there. Now, when he comes to witness the activities of Krishna, the powerful activities of Krishna, and he sees this beautiful, simple, innocent, almost fragile child who was just like performing activities of being doing things like ordinary childs would do, playing games with the friends and, you know, silly children games, running around, imitating animals, sitting down for lunch, laughing, all these things. Very, very ordinary things. And at the same time, also displaying these amazing powers by killing these demons. Displaying perfect and supreme control of all mystic opulences. The way Lord Krishna killed Agasura was expanding himself, so becoming so big and growing to the point that, you know, the snake choked. The way he killed Trinivarta was to make himself so heavy, I mean heavier than a mountain, that the demon could not hold this small child in the air because it was so heavy, so he came crashing down. The way he displayed his unlimited that also you see a small child, and that small child had a little chain tied to his waist, and Mother Yasoda still couldn't tie him with all the ropes that she have in her household and other households, all tied together. So there's an understanding that there is some, that this child is supreme, but how can it be? How can it be? So Lord Brahma has this doubt, and he wants to test. Could this be my supreme lord? And how is my supreme lord playing with all these children? What a horror is to imagine that I'm biting something and giving it to my lord, like these children are doing. I'd die if I, you know, it's just imagine, you know, you're sitting down with your spiritual master and you just pick something out of his plate, you know, and eat it like that. Basically, so it's completely bewildering. It's completely bewildering because Lord Brahma's relationship with the Supreme Lord is as a servant in awe and reverence. So to be able to see that displays of intimacy, that displays of sweetness, the displays of, it's almost a human-like, the human like displays of emotions, of simplicity, of fragility, like that, is completely bewildering. So he wants to test, you know, Lord Brahma is a perfected being, is a great devotee. But even the position of that one can be bewildered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead, by his displays, because even with imperfected beings, there is, you know, it's like the conversations between Lord Chaitanya and Srila Ramananda Roy, that you go deeper and deeper and deeper, go further, go further, go further, like that. Lord Chaitanya will request Ramananda Roy, go further, what is there more? Because it goes deeper and deeper and deeper into greater layers of sweetness and intimacy in the relationship with the Personality of Godhead. So for devotees, perfected beings in different levels is bewildering, just the displays of much more higher levels of intimacy. So Lord Brahma had with this doubt, he tries to test, and in one sense the doubt was a sign of forgetting Krishna's position, or not being able to fully understand him. At one point you forget with doubts. So the principle in itself that we learn, I mean, in many situations we see that the Supreme Lord induces also this type of bewilderment in his pure devotees in order to teach a principle to the world, a lesson. We see the instances of Arjuna becoming bewildered by the bodily concept of life, an eternal associate of the Lord. And through his bewilderment and the instructions of the Bhagavad Gita that is given to him, we become instructed in this principle. What is this principle? One is that the main source of suffering in this world is, or the original cause is, ignorance. It's called avidya. So through avidya, then that degrades into asmita, which means is the development of false ego. So with false ego, we forget, or we acquire a misconception. We have a misconception of the self, but we also have ignorance of the Supreme. So part of the process of self-realization is first, the first step is to understand that we're not the body, we're a spirit soul. We see that in the Bhagavad Gita. The first instructions that are given is that you must understand this principle first. You have to address the false ego and understand your spiritual constitution. And then the second set of instructions is that, well, the fact is that, okay, now that you accepted the nominal knowledge that you are not the body, you're a spirit soul, and understanding that you're conditioned by this bodily conscious of life, then you have to take the process of self-realization to regain your spiritual consciousness. So the process of yoga is given for elevating oneself back to the position of or the consciousness of one's spirit soul to fully realize that. To do that, one have to be able to undergo this process properly. One have to acquire transcendental knowledge, which is called vidya. Transcendental knowledge means three things in a nutshell: understand who you are, but also understand who is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and understand your eternal relationship with Him. So, part of being able to basically become free from the condition of material life is to, well, not part. The most important part is understand the position of Krishna's position. So at the heart of the Bhagavad Gita is knowledge about Krishna. And when Krishna declares that there's of all yogis, the one that is the highest in his opinion is the devotee. And how can someone be while in the process of perfecting oneself can be fully situated in this dedication with devotion, with love and devotion to the personality of God, that the element that is necessary is knowledge about the Absolute. And that's how the seventh chapter of the Bhagavad Gita starts. It's knowledge of the Absolute. If we forget, or if we don't have understanding of the position of Krishna, as it says, you know, he is immediately in the seventh chapter, he tells Arjuna, Mata Parataram Nanyat, that there is no truth supreme greater than me. There's nothing superior than her, than him. That everything, that he is like the thread that holds everything together, the pearls, the thread that holds all the pearls. So he is the principle that holds everything together. Nothing is inferior to him. He is supreme. So the personality of Godhead is the cause of all causes. Sarva Karana Karanam. Lord Brahma himself says in his perfect realization, Ishvara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha, what is it? Satchitananda Vigraha, Yes. Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karana Karanam. Sarva Karana Karanam. He is the cause of all causes. So this principle of being the cause of all causes always allows to be in this principle of vidya. And vidya, when vidya rules, then you have everything clear. The path is clear. When we forget about that, then we're influenced by avidya, forgetfulness. And this moment of forgetfulness of Lord Brahma is what causes this pastime for him, and he becomes corrected by Krishna. Now, my Guru Maharaj always cautions us to be very careful, because Lord Brahma is the head of our sampradaya, and we should not make the mistake of to try to understand that bewilderment for the bewilderment of common people like us. But the principle is there, and the lessons is there. What is the cause of this bewilderment, and how we, or you know, conditioned souls in this material world becomes almost enamored by one's capacity of acting. Each one of us has a particular ability, and with that ability we almost find ourselves, you know, it creates pride, it creates a sense of controlling of Ishvara, it creates a sense of a superiority or something like that, that makes us, you know, that we can show or challenge or things like that. You look for the opportunities to actually be in a position of superiority. Because in the seventh chapter, Krishna tells us that that's at the heart of coming into this material world. Icha dvesha samutena dvanda mohena bharata, that there is this duality of desire and hate. So this desire, what is this desire? Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explained the desire to be Krishna, the desire to be the controller, the desire to be the supreme controller. And hate, well, I don't like whoever is there. You know, initially we like to take Krishna's position. So in one sense, we don't like to have a supreme controller over ourselves. So that's a seed that is there in all conditioned souls, and that's what ultimately we have to clear. We clear that by the process of clearing that is through transcendental knowledge. With transcendental knowledge, it's like a source, and you cut through the knot, the hard knot of material existence and ignorance. So someone in knowledge, someone situated in vidya, will understand that Krishna is the cause but also the effect. He is the cause of all causes. Everything comes from him. So someone in knowledge Perfectly situated NVIDIA will recognize that my abilities, where do they come from? My capacity comes from Krishna. So whatever potencies I have, whatever abilities I have, whatever, in this case, mystic potencies, Krishna is the origin. In the 7th chapter, Krishna explains that to Arjuna. He says, and now listen, that I'm going to tell you the knowledge, this vidya, by which you can understand me in truth. Whoever have this type of knowledge, whoever is able to see like that, can understand me in truth, which is not something simple, because even perfected beings, they, hardly one of them knows me in truth. So it's not a simple thing. And the factual thing is that there's no superior truth superior to me. He is the absolute truth. How you can see me, or how can you apply this understanding in a practical manner? Well, you understand I'm the cause of all causes. Everything. I'm the cause and the effect. So, then he starts to explain. Of all the things that we see, he is the principle, the essence that makes that. So, of water, I am the taste. I am the taste of water. I am the light of the sun and the moon. So, there is the sun and the moon. They cause light, but he's both, actually. And then he says, Sabda ke paurasham nishu, of man, I am the ability. He says that balam balavatam chaham kama raga vivarjitam, that he is the strength of the strong, devoid of passion and desire. So the pure strength, the strength that is there, when that strength is manifested in its purest way, well, that is Krishna. So when we forget about that, when we forget the principles, these principles, then that means that we're covered by avidya. And with avidya, then we get takeover about these abilities that we have. And regardless, the experience in this material world is that you'll be humiliated at one point. You'll be put in your position. Krishna in the form of, he will appear to you in different forms and will actually show your vulnerability, that in his presence and in the presence of his energies, basically we're less than a fig. It's like when Duryodhana was describing the powers of Bhima in comparison to grandfather Bhishma, he said Bhima is like a fig. Like a fig, a fruit. So it's like, you know, something mushy and things very simple to, you know, to consume. So if we are afflicted by avidya, life would teach us the lesson that we're not supreme. were not that great. And many times we experience that. Sometimes that you get that humiliation, that you feel confident about your abilities, and all of a sudden, bang, you're being shown that you know, you've been you have this, what's the word, your embarrassment. You get in public embarrassment. Something happens, you know, it didn't go like that, like, you know. So people work very hard. They train themselves very well to have this, you know, to perfect one's abilities, to achieve that position of superiority. But regardless, the principle is that you will fall down. Even if that fall down comes in the form of death, at that time, you know, all your abilities are taken away. So the principle of falling down for the position of so-called superiority is part of this material world. How's it go? Yeniera vindaksha vimukta maninas tajiyasta bhava avishuddha buddhaya aruhyo krichena padam padam tata aruhyo krichena. One, by one's work very hard to obtain that position of imaginary superiority. Padanti adha nad jusman angrajaha. Padanti adho nadrita jusman angrajaha. Because due to this avidya, we neglect to worship the lotus feet of the Lord, then very soon you fall down. It's a principle. There is no escape of that. So we can learn the hard way, or we can learn in a gentle, kind way that Krishna, you know, in the form of the spiritual master, his representative, or him directly, is teaching us. In this case, he taught Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma immediately he recognized. So, so it's a very important lesson that we never forget that our capacity to do things, our capacity, whatever gift we have, whatever ability we have, where does it come from? So, and then with that, then we'll be protected and we'll be able to properly pursue our connection and relationship with Krishna. Any comments or questions?
Hare Krishna, Subha Prabhu. Thank you for your class. You made a lot of nice points. One point I wasn't originally going to bring up, but since you brought it up, you made the point that that's the dangerous part of getting some abilities, some opulences, is that it creates pride naturally. And then you, like, what is the use of having, like, some power, some ability if you can't use it on others and control others? It's like, it's almost like a waste of energy from our egoistic perspective. And I appreciate that point. And one of my favorite points, like I mentioned before, I think it's one of the most important points because it always comes up. We see sometimes people feel discontent. They feel overly confident when they have some ability, and at the same time people feel discontent when they don't have any ability, any opulences. But we see that the Bhagavatam It provides everyone the ability to be content, even if you don't have any quote-unquote talent, opulence, or ability, because the Bhagavatam of the Gita doesn't focus on one's ability, but it focuses on one's responsibility. There's a nice quote that says, responsibility, or the ability to choose your response, is about making a conscious action, not an unconscious reaction. And there's two stories regarding that. In the Bible, God gave Samson an ability, world's strongest man, Guinness Book of World Records. God told Samson, use your ability for good, protect the Israelites, your people, from the enemies, the Philistines. There's one condition, do not let anyone know what's the source of your strength, which is your hair. If your hair gets cut off, then you'll use your ability. So when Samson got older, he would defeat lions with his bare hands, the Philistines. Nobody could defeat him. So the Philistines thought, what's Samson's kryptonite? Duh, a beautiful woman. So let's hire Delilah, a beautiful woman, to seduce Samson. So finally, Delilah seduced Samson. He told her the source of his strength. She cut off his hair while he was sleeping on her lap, and he was enslaved the rest of his life. On the flip side of the coin, Haridas Thakur was put in the same situation. Ramachandra Khan was envious. He hired a prostitute. But in the end, Haridas Thakur passed the test and transferred the prostitute. So the reason I love this pastime is because we see that although Samson had strength on the outside, but because he didn't have strength on the inside, it led to his degradation. On the other hand, although Haridas Thakur didn't have strength on the outside, but because he had strength on the inside, it led to his elevation. And what this essentially means is, from the teachings of the Bhagavatam, is that we should be less concerned about ability and more concerned about our responsibility. We may be strong in speaking, strong in writing, strong in beauty, fame, knowledge, and renunciation, but as long as we don't have the strength on the inside, then everything we stand for will come crumbling down. Like you said, we'll be humiliated, embarrassed, crumbled. And we see that's the theme throughout the entire Bhagavatam. But my real question is, and point regarding your class, is that you were mentioning Ramananda. You mentioned in the past on Ramananda Roy, where he told Lord Chaitanya told him, go deeper, deeper and deeper. Well, this reminds me of one verse from the Gita, chapter 2, verse 70. It says, Apoya manamachala pratishtam samudra mapa parvishanti yavat tavat kamayam parvishanti sarve sashanti mamnoti nakama kami. It says devotees are like the ocean because they're deep. They go deeper into their spirituality. And there's a similar verse in the Uddhava Gita. It basically gives a very beautiful analogy. It says that because an ocean is so deep, it's not affected by rain or drought. In much the same way, deep spiritualists, they're not affected when the rivers or rain of honor comes in, because they know Krishna is the source of their abilities. He could take it away. So why am I going to become so elated when people glorify me? They're actually glorifying Krishna. Nor do spiritualists become discontent when they're receiving a drought of dishonor, because it was like, I don't have any abilities in the first place, so why am I going to become discontent? On the flip side of the coin, we see that a shallow puddle, it's always affected by rain and drought. In much the same way, materialists become very elated when somebody glorifies them. Oh, you speak so wonderfully, you're so beautiful, you know, oh, thank you, I'm the center of the universe. At the same time, then when they become discontent with somebody else's honor. So my question is, regarding this pastime, we see that in this pastime, Brahma, finally he came to the conclusion, you know, a little bit later, that Krishna, he's more glorious than me. And so we may say, yes, his spirituality is deep. And we don't become discontent when the Guru is Maharaj. But there's another pastime where Lord Krishna wanted to test Lord Brahma to see whether his spirituality was truly deep. In the pastime where Brahma entered Dwarka, he told the gatekeeper, may I see Krishna? And the gatekeeper says, which Brahma are you? What do you mean, which Brahma? I'm the Michael Jordan Brahma, the one and only. And so then finally, long story, you know the story, Krishna showed him that there's many Brahmas who are much superior to you. And I've never known in this pastime, I have to read it again, but we see in the Bhagavatam, when Brahma was humbled by Krishna, he offered prayers to Krishna. But when Brahma was humbled by the other Brahmas, I didn't see him offer any prayers to the other Brahma. So my question is, for our spirituality to go deep, how imperative it is for us to glorify the devotees and not complain about them because we think they're talking too long or they may be receiving more glory than us. And we see that this goes on, competition. We don't compete with the spiritual master because we know we might lose our bhakti, but we compete with other devotees. So it's the same principle, you know, throughout. So how imperative it is to glorify devotees and take every opportunity to glorify them and not criticize them, because we have to keep things in perspective. We're on their deathbed, so maybe you could expand some.
Yeah, more important, I would say, it is just to be honest with oneself. We're taking the principle or the path of becoming purified and becoming a devotee. So we're accepting the path of purification, and that's what we're embracing right now. That's what we're committing ourselves to. And to be able to be effective or more effective in the process of purification is that we have to have a very honest assessments of where we are and how, you know, the things that we're dealing with. So we have to constantly have this honest assessment of my weakness and my strength by that. And devotees help us with that, our spiritual superiors, you know, help us with that. Krishna help us with that. And the process of purification is in the beginning is just to come to understanding all these things. And you'll be able to very much pinpoint your anarthas and start to deal with them. So understanding that in itself, you know, where our position is and how much work I have to do, help us also in dealing with others with tolerance and respect, because we're not very much different from each other in one sense, because most of us are dealing with same principles, just purifying ourselves from all kinds of material conditioning. So it is important to be genuine in one's appreciation of the devotees. It is fine to actually just, even if you don't feel it, you go through, you do things. Like Prabhupada say, you don't feel like chanting, well, chant. You know, like Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, you know. So if you don't feel, you know, to do it, you still do it. You know, the whole say of faking it, fake it, Jitendra likes this one, fake it until you make it, you know, type of thing, that principle. That's all right, but that's a lesser thing. It's better just to be honest. So sometimes we find ourselves praising devotees, but not being sincere in that praise, being more like, you know, it's just like a ritual, more than, you know, something that is felt or that is genuine. And that don't necessarily have the right effect. You know, one can tell when someone is just giving platitudes but not necessarily meaning it. You know, you appreciate in one sense this person is trying, you know, but more important is if we, yes, it is the important principle of appreciating devotees. And that's something that we have to do. But we have to do that with consciousness. We appreciate devotees because they're devotees of the Lord, because Krishna is in the center, and because they're dear to Krishna.
Krishna says that in the seventh chapter. He says, you know, when he describes the four classes of man that comes to him, this Sukritinas, he says they all dear. He says that they all dear to him. So regardless if we're mixed, that's most of us, and we have all these mixed desires and things like that. You know, some of us are for the money, some of us are for relieving ourselves of our miseries, some of us are for our sense of knowing things and inquisitiveness. So, but all of those, they're very dear to Krishna, he says, they're dear to me. So we appreciate devotees because they're dear to Krishna. So Krishna is at the center of that relationship, that appreciation. And that's the part that we have to cultivate. To be able to do that, really, we have to be very much focused on our purification. If we simply take things, you know, just with no depth, it's just, you know, like shallow, then that is, we still have some work to do. We have to look inside and make things real. And that's a part that we have to be pay a lot of attention to. Try to be real in our expressions. But for that we have to, again, we have to have some understanding of ourselves. So why do I appreciate a devotee? Because I see someone like me who is working hard on becoming, purifying themselves and becoming a pure devotee. And then because I understand all the obstacles that I have to deal with, and there are certain obstacles that are almost insurpassable for me, you know, and then I see a devotee, oh, they also have this type of obstacles. Maybe not the same obstacle, maybe different. Maybe the one that is blocking this devotee for me is very easy. But, you know, I'd also have all these other blocks that are almost insurpassable for me. That I need mercy, I need help. I need tolerance from the devotees, I need understanding, all these type of things. So being introspective is a very important thing because it allows to properly not only relate to ourselves in terms of our process of purification, but also to the devotees in all levels, from superiors to equals to those who are younger than us, and to relate to Krishna. Otherwise, you know, we'll be just bewildered all the time. Bewildered by all this devotee, why Krishna's allowing this, oh my God, you know, all this stuff, and you're going to need a break, and you're just going to go and smoke a cigarette or, you know, take a drink or something like that. Smoke a joint or something, you know. So, so that's the important part. That's the thought. Anything else?
I was appreciating when you brought up the points about how Krishna is like the thread that ties everything together like pearls on a thread, and how Krishna, he says in, I forget which chapter it is, but he says, he lists all these things that you can see him in, like he's the taste in water, he's the light of the sun and the moon, he's the strength of men that was free of what are the two things it was free of?
Free of passion and desire.
Passion and desire. So he gives us a list of these things in which we can perceive him, we can see him, and if we like notice those things, then we're like, oh, there's Krishna. But then where, I'm trying to think of like how to say the question, but basically where do we draw the line? Like, is there a point where like only when we see positive things is that where we can be like, oh, there's Krishna, or if we see, like, if we do see, like, passion or desire, is there a way to also see that as Krishna as well, or is it only positive things we see and negative things we look at in a different way, or what would be the best way to see Krishna in everything and every circumstance in that respect?
Well, you can draw the line when you see vidya and avidya. It's, you know, so the causes of avidya is hellish situation. It's just, you know, it's all this degradation. That's the cause of avidya. So when you see degradation, then you can understand, oh, there's forgetfulness of Krishna here. And when you see elevation, then you can understand, oh, there is connection with. So we can see that degradation and elevation. Okay, thank you so much. Grantarashman Bhagavatam ki jai.